Let's get started. The committee meetings will continue with finance and budget.
Well, two comments to start out. First of all, my fellow committee members, we need to pair up. There's three of us today, so you all are going to have to decide who's doing the motion and who's the seconding, but we'll have to do that. We're going to have a very exciting meeting. Unfortunately, we don't have video. We don't have a dramatic presentation about shutting a building down, but Ann is going to lead us.
Or have a bus?
Or we don't have a bus, but Ann Mead is going to lead us in adding up columns of numbers. But please get your pencil sharp.
So, let me see if I understand.
The only thing between you and your
Christmas dinner is finance and budget, correct?
Yes.
You get to go to a Christmas celebration after finance and budget concludes.
Right.
I think you'll be able. It'll be happy hour somewhere, but you'll definitely make happy hour.
Okay. So with that in mind, we are going to do one thing that is a little out of order. It is not. It's all appropriate, but to accommodate Bailey Jordan trying to catch an airplane, we are thank him for all his hard lifting and helping us with what we do, and we're going to help him. So we're going to bring that information item. Quarterly internal audit report to the table first, if there are no objections by anyone. Bailey, thank you very much for your presence, by the way.
Okay, thank you. Nice to be here. And there's the presentation. Actually, a fairly brief status update on internal audit this go-round. I just wanted to let you know what we've been working on and what's coming up in the January-February timeframe. So, again, just a few items to cover today. Certainly, as always, want to let you know where we are, budget to actual, and how we're tracking against our objectives for the fiscal year. So, since September, we have completed one audit. This is a mandatory audit by the NCAA. We have a slide on this in a moment. So I'll defer any further comment on it at this moment. We have two audits that are in process. Actually, the field work for these two audits has been completed. We've drafted the reports. Next step is to have the auditees review. The campus safety, what we were doing there was taking a look at your emergency management plan and all the different plans that are on your website regarding emergency preparedness, campus safety, and doing some benchmarking against other similar-sized universities. And then on the whistleblower, because you don't have a whistleblower process hotline here per se, again, this was more of a benchmarking exercise. We went out to see what other universities were doing and recommend some considerations for you here at WKU. So we anticipate wrapping those audits up in January and be issuing them at that time. I will say so far on the campus safety that we are impressed with the plan that you have. A lot of work went into this back in 2012 and think it's paid off. But nonetheless, we found some things that we think you want to consider going forward. So moving on, you can see for January, February, there's actually an audit that we were going to do in December with the WKU staff auditor that we plan to hire, but we haven't got that person on board yet. We have resumes. We're conducting interviews in January and hope we'll have someone on board in February. But this was not an audit that had to be done in December, so we moved it. We want the WKU staff auditor to conduct this audit. There is one that I left off of here for January that has to get done in January, and that's around an NCAA mandatory audit around football attendance. And so be working with Daryl and Matt to get that done in January. So you can see we've got a pretty busy couple of months coming up after the break. I mentioned the mandatory NCAA work that we did this past month. This is actually a review of the athletic events that you see their football, basketball, and baseball. This is actually work that Crow Horvath will leverage, use the work of internal audit for their agreed-upon procedures report that they will be issuing. So we did this audit last month, and we have provided our findings to Crow, and thought that Daryl and Matt did an excellent job. We had no major findings, and in fact, this year the numbers comparing the banner general ledger revenue to what's in the Ticketmaster revenue was even closer than last year. So we're real pleased with what we saw there. Any questions on this particular audit? Again, this is a routine. This is something that we do every year. So let's move on to the budget. As you know, for fiscal year 14, the annual budget's $191,000. Some of that is allocated, of course, to the staff auditor that you'll be hiring. The portion that has been budgeted for Grant Thornton is $124,000. This includes our travel expenses. And then we have a line item called ad hoc for any special request audits that may come up during the year. And then at the bottom, we just focus on the Grant Thornton budget. And as of right now, we're running a little ahead of schedule, so that's good. And don't have any reason right now to think that that won't stay.
If we don't use the $30,000, does that carry forward?
So the last slide, and then we'll open it up to questions, is just to let you know, again, our major goals for FY14 and how we're progressing against them. I mentioned the first bullet, where we are with hiring someone, and then the next three bullets, we have met these. So the board approved the charter, you all approved the charter a few months back, and we've just been executing audits following the Institute of Internal Auditors, the IIA standards. A little wordy here on the fourth bullet, apologize, but I think it's important for you to understand how the process works as far as audit reports getting issued. We always want to make sure the auditee has a chance to review our findings and provide comments, responses. And then while the report's still in draft form, the president and senior vice president of finance administration review the reports. And then any other responsible parties, in case, for example, if the audit might touch more than one department, we want to have any department involved the opportunity to review the report. And then once everyone's comfortable with it, then we issue that report. I send that report to the chair of the Finance and Budget Committee and copy the chairman of the Board of Regents. So that's the process. It's important that you understand that. And then the last bullet is, we do, according to our internal audit charter, have to periodically provide updates to the Administrative Council, to the Finance and Budget Committee, and to the Board of Regents. And we're working out a schedule now that to the Board of Regents, we plan each October to provide an update on what we've been working on that previous fiscal year. And then, of course, we meet quarterly with this committee, and then the Administrative Council. We meet, we're now agreeing on twice a year at least, and then Ann will provide updates to the Administrative Council as necessary in those off cycles of when we formally meet. So that's what we've been up to and what's ahead for January, February, and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you.
Ann, did I leave anything out?
Right. Comments or questions for Baylor? Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Glad to have you on board and representing our university.
Well, thank you.
Travel safely.
Glad to be here. Thanks. Everyone have a great holiday.
Thank you.
I'll see you in January.
Yep. Mr. Chairman, I think we'll switch from the information items back to action items. I'll draw the committee to action item 3.1, auditor's report and financial statements for the fiscal year ended in June 30. Ann, do you want to address that?
Sorry, I was squishing him in
the. I'm sorry. Questions. Yes, that's okay. Action item 3.1.
Okay.
Acceptance of the auditor's report and financial statements for the fiscal year ending in June 30, 2013.
Thank you. Sorry. Yes, Crowe Horwath has completed the audit for the fiscal year that just ended last June 30 and issued a report. You have with your agenda materials the financial statements for the university, which were prepared by management, including the management discussion and analysis. We have with us today Pete Hugo, partner with Crowe Horwath, that will address the audit, the independent audit.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We prepared a few slides to go through an overview of the financial statements, knowing that you probably didn't want to read through this entire document at the footnotes. And
actually, it's good reading.
Okay, good. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Very good reading. Thank you.
My name is Pete Hugo, and I'm an audit partner in the higher education practice with Crowe Horwath. Steve Roy is with me. He's the senior on the engagement and was involved in the on-site audit field work as well. And we've prepared this outline of key points of the audit process to go through with you, and we're happy to answer any questions you may have as we go through the process. We're going to provide a brief overview of the process, review the contents of the Statement of Auditing Standards 114 letter, which is required communications to those charged with governance, the audit of the financial statements, which includes an audit of your federal awards, and compliance with House Bill 622 letter. As I stated, I'm Pete Hugo. Steve Roy is with me, and we're very happy to be involved with the university and appreciate the opportunity to perform your annual financial statement audit. As far as an overview of the audit process, just for your information to see how the process works, we began with a planning meeting in May and conducted some preliminary interim field work on site where we begin our work on internal controls testing, audit planning, and looking at the testing of federal awards. In the June timeframe, and July for the student financial aid aspects of that. Our final on-site fieldwork was conducted through the middle part of August, and our final reports were issued October 2nd in order for you to comply with your due date to the Auditor of Public Accounts on October 4th. And we had very excellent cooperation from all of your staff throughout the audit process, which we greatly appreciate their preparedness and answering all of our questions. The finalized documents that were issued included a Statement of Auditing Standards 114 letter, which I believe everyone has received. It's about a 4 or 5 page letter, and in this presentation I'll summarize the key points of that letter. Again, this is an auditing standard that requires us as auditors to communicate specific items to the group that is responsible for governance over the audit process. So our responsibility under auditing standards is to express an opinion on the financial statements, which we provided. And our responsibility under government auditing standards would be to disclose any violations or significant issues related to your compliance with government rules and regulations, which we did not note any such items. As far as plan, scope, and timing of the audit, we communicated with the chairman of the board in the planning stages of the audit to discuss a high-level overview of our risk areas and scope. And significant accounting policies, noting in the letter that those are disclosed in Note 1 of the financial statements, all of the university's significant accounting policies, and Note 17 to the financial statements explains some new accounting policies that were implemented this year, primarily a couple of new GASB, or Government Accounting Standards Board, statements related to the financial statement presentation. So those are listed here, new accounting policies, GASB Statement 63 and 65, had some changes in the presentation and the labeling of the financial statements. It's now called a Statement of Net Position rather than Statement of Net Assets, and a few other more cosmetic type changes, but that was implemented this year. And the GASB Statement 65 was an item that you chose to early implement this year. It's required to be implemented next year. And made a couple of changes in the way you account for bond issue costs. So those items were new this year. And management judgments and accounting estimates, the areas listed here are areas where management makes estimates in your financial statements, and we're required to communicate those to you. These estimates are consistent processes with how you have done them in prior years. We look to see that you're consistent in how you make those estimates and in your processes from year to year, and we had no concerns in that regard. Continuing on the SAS 114 letter, if we had any concerns about the qualitative aspects of your accounting practices, we would be required to communicate those to you. So if we felt your practices were inconsistent or selectively posting adjustments, things of that nature, we would communicate that to you, and there were no such items. Audit adjustments, there were no corrected adjustments posted, so we did not find any material errors that needed to be adjusted in order for us to issue an unqualified or clean opinion, which is a great statement about the work that your management put into preparing the financial statements.
There's one item we noted as a waived adjustment, which means that it is an item that we feel is not material to the overall financial statements. And it was discussed with management, and it's in relation to the entrance fees to Conference USA. Communications regarding our independence. We're noting that we are independent to perform your audit. We do not perform any management functions or any other services that would impair our auditor independence. And that's something that we're required to revisit annually and communicate to you. And the last section under other communications is where we would tell you about any of these items that are listed here. As you see, most have none in relation to any disagreements with management or problems or issues we encountered at the audit. As I stated, that was a very smooth process. The items that have something noted are the first one, other information and documents containing the financial statements. That's simply noting that in the audited financial statement document, there's a management discussion and analysis at the beginning that was prepared by your management and provided to accompany the financial statements, which is a requirement. And the third one from the bottom, the representations that we request from management. As part of every audit process, we request a management representations letter, simply stating that management has provided us with all the information that we requested and has disclosed any significant items to us. Any questions thus far?
I'd like to make a comment on that previous slide. The word none in financial normally is a negative, and that looks extremely positive.
Yes. As far as the audit of the financial statements, I believe everyone has a copy of the audited financial statements. The key highlights, it is an unqualified or clean opinion. So the auditor's opinion, which is at the beginning of the report on pages 1 and 2, reflects an unqualified opinion. And it also, your financial statements contain several component units that are discreetly presented. So it means there are additional pages behind your statement of net position and statement of changes that cover the component units of the university. The management discussion and analysis is included at the beginning of the report, which overviews key aspects of the financial statements and some of your current year activities. And that is prepared by your management, and we review it for consistency with the financial reports. And then the actual statements themselves, the statement of net position, contains your assets, liabilities, and now new this year under the statements that you adopted, deferred inflows and outflows. The statement of activities shows all of your operating and non-operating revenues and expenses, and the statement of cash flows shows the changes in your cash balance during the year. There are several notes to the financial statements, which are required disclosures about accounting policies and other certain types of disclosures.
Just to clarify on component units that you see in your bound documents, when we mean component units, the WKU Foundation with its separate board, separate financial statements, the College Heights Foundation, and the Student Life Foundation. So just those are the three that are not blended in with the university's financial statements, are distinct separate corporations with their own boards.
Thank you.
Are there any questions on the financial statement documents or any detail that anybody would like to go into further on those? Okay. One of the other significant aspects of the audit process is the audit of federal awards, and this is a requirement under federal OMB Circular A133 for institutions that spend over $500,000 of federal grant funds. You're required to have an audit performed under that circular and government auditing standards. In the financial statements, there's a schedule of expenditures of federal awards that summarizes all of the federal awards that you expend. That begins back on page 74, and there are several pages of awards. We're required to go through a prescribed process of selecting major programs to test, where we test your compliance with specific funding streams in accordance with the federal rules and the related internal controls. As a result of that testing, and the process we go through, there were three major programs this year: the Student Financial Assistance Cluster, the Research and Development Cluster, and the Head Start Cluster. Those were all tested as part of our audit process, both in the interim and year-end stages. The results of that A133 audit process are disclosed in the Report on Compliance and Internal Controls and the Report on Compliance with Major Programs. And the summary of that is we did not report any findings or question costs. Schedule is where we would disclose if we noted any items that were, for example, unallowable expenses in accordance with the federal rules, or if you were not reporting certain items that you needed to report. And our testing did not note any items that were at the level needing to be reported as findings and question costs. And thus, we have issued an unqualified or clean opinion on your compliance. In addition to the compliance steps, we're required to gain an understanding of your internal controls over compliance and disclose any significant weaknesses or deficiencies that we find in relation to those controls, and we had no such items. The federal award process was a very clean and smooth audit process this year. Compliance with House Bill 622 letter also disclosed no instances of noncompliance. So very clean report. I think that the clean audit, the clean A-133 opinion, I work with a lot of college and universities, and that is something to be very proud of and something that is rare as well. So that's it for our planned report on the audit process and the documents themselves. I would be happy to answer any questions, and our contact information is listed here as well.
Sure, I have one question.
Certainly.
As the external auditor, you obviously made certain observations about our internal audit program. Or did you? And if so, what were those observations? Do you find it to be satisfactory?
The internal audit process, I know it was referenced, the NCAA procedures, we refer to those. So we do use that information. One of the key things we look at in an internal audit process is to give us comfort about the overall tone and emphasis that's placed on internal controls within an organization, and to see the activity that is going on between this group and the internal auditor gives us comfort that internal controls are taken very seriously at all levels of the university. So that sets a tone for our procedures, and we do gain an understanding of what work the internal auditor is doing as well. So it seems that you have a very robust system, and we're it's great to see the communication that's happening here with this group.
Yeah. Any other questions? I think most everyone would agree. We thank you for your expertise, and we certainly, this is, says shouts volumes for your department as well.
It does. Jim Cummings, the chief financial officer here, Benji Harmon, director of accounting, and they do a top-notch job. Their staff, very little comes to my attention because the process moves so smoothly and so timely. So I'm very proud of the work that they do.
I hope you'll translate that to all the staff people, because that's certainly an audit.
Yes, sir.
Of this clean is something to be proud of. Any other questions?
Thank you. Thank you, Sophie.
Would entertain a motion on action item 3.1 to bring it to the floor for other discussion.
I make a motion that we accept the auditor's report.
Second.
Second by Freddie. Any discussion? Call for vote.
Aye.
All in favor? Unanimously of the group here. Action item 3.2, operating budget revisions. Anne, would you like to address that?
Yes, periodically we come back to the board. You approve the annual operating budget to the degree that we have additional funds that require expenditure authority from the Board of Regents. We bring it back to you, asking you to approve it. So the revisions that you have today are slightly more than $15 million, which is common at this time of year, because this is the time of year that we come back to you and say we have carry forward funds that need expenditure authority. Carry forward funds are those funds that either excess revenue was generated in the previous fiscal year or under expenditures compared to budget created balances at the end June 30th, 2013, and we're bringing it forward to ask you for permission to spend those funds. So out of the $15 million, approximately $14 million of it is unexpended funds from the previous fiscal year that is rolling forward for approval, leaving a little over $1 million or so for new revenue sources. Under new revenue sources, I know you're quite familiar with the roundabout and the fact that you approved the sale of property. So the sale of the property did not give us the authority to spend the funds when they come in. So we're back asking you for the $465,000, which will allow us to address wayfinding and other needs associated with the reconstruction of that intersection. So you have in your agenda on page 22 several items that are listed, of which we have departments that have generated revenue with the expectation that they will have the revenue returned, especially when they need it to offset expenses. So if you have any questions about any individual item, I'll try to answer those. Kim Reed, budget director's here. We probably have a few other budget officers that might be able to help as well.
Give you a moment to look those over just to refresh your memory.
I just had a quick question about the orientation fees for the Honors College retreat. One, is that just pretty much being used as an in-out transaction, collect the fees, and then it goes pretty much back out? But it's completely compliant with the new fee standards that were established after the internal audit last summer?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Thanks.
And on the doctoral physical therapy, the use funding on that, is that just a timing difference on the delay in getting the program started?
Yes, it was. We needed to proceed with budget development and had a timing issue for actually finalizing how many students and how much revenue would be generated by the program. So we had a placeholder in the budget, and the next year's budget will obviously be on target. So it's not reflection of a significant growth in DPT. It was a timing issue. Can I answer any other questions?
Any other comments or questions? Ann and I meet prior to this meeting to review what's on the agenda and so forth. And obviously, my first comment to her was, what is $11,195,839 in DLO, and how does that come about, and how long has that amount of money been on the table coming back to the group for reappropriation
carry forward,
thank you very much.
Distribution.
Yes, and Ann has given me a lot of information. I am not too sure that I would not request a little more study into if that is something that is recurring over a 3 to 5 year period, that we not tighten that up from the standpoint of it's a little hard to think that we can do those, miss those numbers by that much every year. And maybe Dr. Emsley would address just a little bit of that.
Yeah, and Beth Lavis here also. I don't think I'd characterize it as missing the numbers. These are planned earnings that we use for expenses in the following year. And I can break it down very broadly into 4 or 5 categories. About $3.5 million of that is a dealer reserve. Although we're very confident that distance learning will continue to be part of our future, it's a very volatile market, and there needs to be a little bit of buffer to accommodate fluctuations. DLO as a unit can take risks. That's one of the reasons we have DLO, where a traditional department budget could not take risks in starting a cohort program, for example. If it's successful, the cohort program is moved into the base, and we will be moving approximately $1.2 million of this money into the base next year. But before we can do that, we have to establish that it's on solid ground. Approximately $2.6 million of that is distributed to the colleges and departments. And again, it's money earned in the previous year that we allocate in the next fiscal year. And that goes for all kinds of activities, faculty development, travel, other things that are not in the budget and could be categorized as funding with one-time money. But I characterize this as recurring one-time funds. We do expect that to be every year, and it provides a very valuable resource for the faculty and for the academic units to use. That's about $2.6 million this year, and yes, I expect that to be true next year as well, where the carry the money we earned this year will be carried forward for those expenses. Approximately $3 million of that is what I would call use of one-time funds to fund recurring needs. About $1.1 million we use to enhance the packages for graduate assistance. That's not in the budget, but it allows our graduate dean and our departments to offer more attractive financial packages and to recruit more graduate assistants to support our programs. It's not in the budget book, but we use the carry forward to support that and have done for the past 4 years. Approximately $600,000 of that is money earned from cohort programs that have not yet been transferred to the base, which has to go into departments to support the activities associated with those cohort programs. And just over $1 million I retain as essentially a discretionary fund for things that just happen throughout the year. And that's what I believe this will be a continuing number, but I would not characterize it as an inaccuracy in you know, pre-thought or budgeting. We know this is going to occur, and funds have to be carried forward into the next year to support expenses that we know will occur in the next year.
Thank you very much.
And Beth can add more detail if you wish.
That answers my question.
This is the same source of funds that you heard Beth Lavis describe about having to pay fees to be able to offer our distance learning courses in other states. Approximately $400,000 of that balance, in fact, goes to that expense.
That was part of the $3 million of what I call one-time funds for what I believe will be a recurring, you know, budgetary concern.
Does that help?
Certainly.
Certainly.
If we know it's going to happen every year for 5 years, I'd say it becomes a budget item instead of a reoccurring expense. I mean, it tightens up the whole budgeting process. Seemed to be. Should be targeted a little
bit. We did approximately 3 years ago move how much money from one time into budget?
$1.4 million
so
far, and
to budget part-time faculty largely, which had been funded largely in the same manner by using carry forward in the previous year. So we have started that process. We have to be a little careful not putting it all into budget.
I understand.
Can I say just one real quick?
Sure.
So we are definitely a revenue dependent model.
I'm sorry.
We are very much a revenue dependent model, mm-hmm. rather than a budget model, because this number may look stable on the outside, but inside we have programs that go to base budget. We have three programs that generated $1 million this year that will be in base budget, not in our budget next year. But we'll be starting more projects to take their places. So we have projects that are ending. We have several projects that are in the negative, but we have other projects that are growing very quickly. And so when you look at the number as in a total, it tends to, in the past few years, look stable, and that's wonderful. I think that's a tribute to our faculty. But when you look internally, our programs are very volatile. So, I understand your concerns, but it's a more volatile area than you would realize. So.
Just think. We all need to kind of know, and I appreciate your explanation. I think I understand.
Out of that $11 million, $2 million of it was unbudgeted revenue. So that means that you've got another $9 million budgeted to DLO with some expectation of actually allocating it in the next year. But it does allow for any volatility in their programs.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Move for approval of the revisions to the 2013-14 operating budget.
Have a second. Second. All in favor? Say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Like sign. The next item, Ann, if you would also guide us through that, personnel actions 3.3.
Yes, personnel actions, including the permanent salary adjustments between August 28th of this year to November 1st. The one-time compensation adjustments between September 1st and the end of November. And as you heard with the academic committee, one last item added to the personnel actions to reflect the creation of the new department, psychological sciences.
Thank you.
So they've asked that be approved along with the personnel
right.
action.
And just to everyone's attention, we did this as the title. I think it's a separate page.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Asked that be approved as part of the personnel
as part action. Of. Is the committee understand what we did there? Okay, good. Anything else on that matter, Ann? Any discussion? This comes as a recommendation.
Yeah, I move that the faculty and staff.
Item, let it note that Cynthia said action item 3.2 is a motion.
Second.
Second. Favor? Say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Like sign. And it passes. And I think we now
Information items.
Yeah, we got two information items, 2 and 3. Council on Post-Secondary Education 14-16 budget recommendations and focusing on efficiencies on energy management, which I think is the John Osborne show, right?
So the first item, I believe you've heard bits and pieces about the recommendation made in November for the next biennial budget. Submitted by the Council on Post-Secondary Education to the governor and to leadership in the General Assembly. I wanted to give you an opportunity to have a summary in one place should you want to refer to this, because what you'll hear from Robin Taylor as the session proceeds is comparisons against the CPE recommendations so that you feel some comfort that when we talk about college and career readiness, if it's in the governor's budget or not, or if it's in the General Assembly recommendation, performance funding, degree production funds, what does that mean to WKU and why it's important? You'll hear more about that as Robin gives you legislative budget updates. A summary of our highest priorities as it relates to, as you already heard today, about the science complex. Also in the book, which I think I'm not sure that you had received before, on page, would be about page 31 for you. I think it says page 8 on the bottom because it's a CPE document. A summary of the CPE recommendation that lets you see recommendations for WKU in comparison to other institutions. I can answer more detailed questions if you'd like. President Ransell, is there anything else you'd like to say in this item?
No, our the two categories where we are most prominent in this budget model are college and career readiness, $2.3 million, and performance funding, almost $1.9 million. But again, that assumes that the full budget is funded at nearly $52 million. In each year of the biennium, and it's not likely. It's not likely, and if a smaller number is funded, then the presidents will zero in on the option of either taking a percentage. For example, if request 50 and 20 gets funded, then we'd take these numbers and take the same percentage of that number, which is not likely, I don't think. More likely, we'll choose to focus on funding the performance funding model in its entirety and eliminating the other buckets, if you will, in this model. Or it could be some other category, the college and career readiness. The one difference, and I explained some of this to you, I think, perhaps in some of my written communication, the college and career readiness, while we have the largest appropriation of each of the institutions because we have a larger number of students coming from counties that need college and career readiness at the local school level in order to make those students more college ready, that money is restricted. In other words, there is a series of things that it has to be spent on. And so we cannot use that to pay the bills, to address compensation or benefits or fixed cost increases or other things that we'll have to address. Whereas the performance funding number is entirely unrestricted, and we can use it to address those things, and would be used, that number, if it gets funded, will be used entirely for compensation, if it gets funded. So that's just what you need to be aware of as you track this. And the concern we continue to have with this model is that it funds everybody from a percentage of the appropriation about equally, which continues to drive up the discrepancy in funding per student for those campuses that have grown the most. And that's a concern that I have described to you recently and will continue to keep you posted as a new funding model unfolds over the coming year. The other thing that I want to point out, because...
Dr. Angel, let me ask you, that in that specifically, you're talking about the $900 million that
is
on the other side.
A new
this fund, is a reference, that is, we're discussing $50 million here...
In new money.
In new money.
Proposed money.
And the CPE has spent 1 year dissecting this to the point where we're now, and then we've got $900 million that we're not... addressing
$950 million,
Dr. Ransel's biggest issue.
And my issue is a redistribution of that base based on enrollment and mission and performance. And we now have the council, a unanimous resolution from the council to begin pursuit of a new funding model. And that's what I'm anxious to track going forward, and we'll keep you posted. Thank you, John. The other factor that's critically important to us is the funding, the and if you look on page 30, you see a KER rate increase description. This is a matter of real money to us, $2.1 million that we are being mandated to pay for the retirement system in order to make the retirement system solvent. So we could get the performance funding model funded in its entirety and still be behind because we got to pay KERS $2.1 million. Now, we have requested that the governor's office include in the budget recommendation that the retirement system mandates be included in any legislative fix to the pension fund challenge that the state is addressing. We don't know yet what the outcome of that will be, but if we should be so fortunate as to be included in the fix for pension funds by the General Assembly, then that would be as important to us as a $2 million appropriation. We can avoid that $2 million cost. That's real money because we're going to have to pay it if we can't avoid it by a legislative fix. This is a somewhat of a complex model, but avoiding a mandated cost is about as important to us as getting a new appropriation because it would have the same net effect on our budget. So we're tracking this in several different ways, and we'll know more as the governor presents the governor's budget to the General Assembly in mid-January, and we'll track it through the House and through the Senate and through conference until it's all said and done somewhere around April.
Let me add that this is one of the dilemmas for the CPE. Do you ask for what higher education needs, or do you try to temper it in some recognition of the ability of the Commonwealth to fund it? And perhaps not even to irritate the governor or the General Assembly about by asking for that which is probably not feasible given other projected increases, whether it's Medicaid, prisons, other pressing needs, retirement system. But to put it in some another context, that, as the President indicated, the performance funding is important. We earn it, but our hands aren't tied in how we spend it. So even if it's fully funded, that's about $2 million. And I glanced over at the current year's budget. We funded with a 3% tuition increase. Basically, it was 5% in the graduate. The bread and butter of ours is undergraduate, a 3% increase. Our projected increase, including nursing growth, was approximately $6 million. So $6 million helped fund a 2% salary increase in all of our fixed costs. So it gives you an idea that a $2 million increase from the Commonwealth won't go really far in terms of us being able to build next year's budget. So the other thing we'll monitor over the spring is the CPE's discussion about what the tuition rate increase will be for fiscal year 15, and our ability to build an adequate budget for fiscal year 15 is going to be a challenge. It will again. So those are the dilemmas that you can see are unfolding right now, and that you'll hear much more about at your next meeting.
The final thing I would mention is the capital portion of this for capital projects, and that's this spreadsheet that's in your material, and you can look across the page and see how we would participate if this were to get fully funded. And the request is for $600 million in capital construction, state-bonded projects across the campuses. And in this case, I'm quite satisfied with the distribution of that bond pool. It's based on square footage on your campus. It's based on age of your facilities. It's based on a study that was done several years ago on the conditions of the campuses. It's based on your enrollment. It's based on your total public funds, which is tuition and state appropriation. Several factors go into the calculation of what campuses get what percent of a capital projects pool. And in the final analysis, we get 12% of whatever gets funded in the capital project model. And if you're looking at the page where you see A plus B plus C plus D plus E, that's all the variables, total capital distribution, percent share, $70,708,000, 12%. And then the other variable is there is a formula by which some of what you get has to be spent on asset preservation, and some can be spent on new construction. There's a slight favor toward asset preservation in all the distributions, and a little less on new and expanded facilities, which suits us just fine, because our number one project is the renovation of Thompson Complex Center Wing, which is mostly a renovation of that building, asset preservation, but there's also new space that would come on board to compensate for the loss of the North Wing, and we're going to replace the planetarium. So we would fall in either category. So our number one priority, if this gets funded, would be covered. And if it all would be funded, we would do our number one priority. We would secondly address some of our in-ground electrical and steam line replacement priority. And then the third priority would be probably, if this gets fully funded, do the design work on the new College of Business building, which is our second capital project priority. Now, it would take about $55 million in annual debt service to fund a $6 million bond pool. And so basically, this kind of competes against the request for operating money. So you begin to see we got about $50 million here and $50 million there for higher ed. So neither is likely to get funded in its entirety. I get different opinions when I ask about the appetite for capital projects, since it's been now 7 years since capital projects have been funded by the General Assembly. There's a really pent-up demand, particularly in public education, as much as higher education. And so we'll see how that unfolds. But this is the model. This is the request. And what this does is it displaces the old process where the campuses just had their projects and they went to the General Assembly and we all worked independently to lobby for, we'll fund our project, and the other campuses will be doing the same thing. Well, this says fund the model, and we have a distribution formula for how what you fund will be distributed, and it's much more clean, less political, less competitive among the campuses, and really kind of doesn't engage each regional delegation to fight for their project. And so it's a much better way to approach it, although frankly I think some legislatures will probably miss the opportunity to say I got my project funded in my district. But anyway, this is the model. Wanted you to have it, wanted you to understand it as best we can, and we shall keep you posted, and all the fun starts in January. All right, Robin? But we had breakfast with our legislative delegation 2 days ago and went through the whole priority list, and I've got a communication coming to you on what our legislative priorities are, and And so we will keep you informed.
We applaud Robin and the resources that she has. She did a fantastic job in that regard. And Dr. Ansel, we thank you for your guidance. I would like to quote one of my dear friends and mentors, Don Vitale, and say that hope is not a strategy. So this new funding model, I think we all should be open. I would suggest that we all be open to support in any way that we can Robin and Dr. Ransell's direction. We all know legislators at the appropriate time. I'm not saying we leave this room and call and say we need more money, because that's not specific enough, but we need their guidance. But if that call does come, we should all be ready to wave the Western flag in a very specific way. So
Now, I would encourage any of you who have any contact with any member of the General Assembly at any time, don't ever let that communication occur without saying fund the higher ed model and fund the capital projects pool.
Well, that's what direction I want.
That's the message.
Right, and right now that message is most important with Governor Beshear.
All right.
Who is going to have the first, he'll be the first one out of the gate. The General Assembly will at least begin working the process from his budget. So to the extent that you communicate with the governor, I know many of you do individually at different times, but to the extent that you do, expressing your support for the higher ed budget model is very, very important. And specifically for those things, performance funding in particular, that's pretty critical, I think, for all of us.
It's easier to keep something in a budget that's already been proposed by the governor than it is to get something in if it doesn't get included in the governor's initial budget. That's happened, of course, but it's just easier to keep it in and shepherd it through the houses.
Let's start there. It's it's hard to come up from behind.
So. But fund the higher ed model, support the capital projects pool.
And everybody has the February date on their calendar, Julia. I think the February 25th is the date for our reception in Frankfort. It's the Chamber of Commerce, South Central Kentucky Chambers reception, but we are the title sponsor. We moved away a few years ago from doing one of our own, just a WKU event, and partnered with the Chamber here to do one bigger one that brought more folks from the community. And I hope that you will all be able to attend and
get
more details.
Yeah, let me encourage what you just said. The more of us that show up there, the more impressive it is for all of those people that walk around looking for their free cocktails. But it's a part of the process. But
yeah.
The fact that you walk in there with the WKU pin and all of a sudden says, yeah, I saw you people all over the place.
Having our board members engaged is important.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Our last item, I don't like the idea that Finance and Budget Committee never has any good news. We're always talking about sad, depressing.
You're going to show us a video.
So what we did at the last meeting, in the name of focusing on efficiencies, we talked to you about how we are good stewards of our money and are trying to save money. We talked about e-procurement. This time I've asked John Osborne to talk about energy management, because it's a tremendous success story where not only have we saved money, we're good, I don't know what, stewards of the environment. So I will end on a very positive note with John's presentation.
Thank you. And just earlier said how important it was that we managed our fixed costs. Did she not describe how every year when we prepare a budget, one of the first things we got to do is determine what are our fixed operating costs in comparison to how much new revenue we're going to get, etc. So managing your fixed costs is a lot about what this is all about. In other words, facilities management, university has known and has practiced for quite some time energy management. I'm sorry.
Hello.
We're not trying to preach.
He made the announcement and shut it down.
Yeah, exactly. We've taken finals and codes. And, yeah.
We have. Sorry, I couldn't resist.
We know.
Anyway, the budget has $10 million in it in the current year to set aside for utilities. That's right at 4%. So, I mean, we are talking about a very sizable part of the campus operations. What we have to share with you today is merely we've been really trying to find a way to be as efficient as possible for quite some time. It just so happens that when we stopped the music and was looking at the data here recently, that in the last 5 years in particular, when you compound this on top of that and you do all these different things, and then all of a sudden it starts coming together after years of work and you look at the data, is something we thought we would like to share with you. So I want to start with what I would call the statistics that tell the story about our success, and then I'm going to tell you what are the things we did in order to get to these impressive statistics. First of all, this chart here is merely demonstrating with the blue bars what has been the utilization or usage, consumption of kilowatt hours of electricity over the span of those years. Now, why am I focusing first on electricity? Electricity is 60% of the utility budget, okay? And it happens to be, when we do a carbon footprint analysis, the largest contributor to the university's carbon footprint. So our management of our utilities is important, and all of them are, but we really have to focus first on our lowest hanging fruit, so to speak, and that's our greatest opportunity is in electricity. So measuring it by per square foot is the best way to do that. In other words, how are you doing on a per square foot basis of kilowatt consumption? And what we have been able to do, which is what's demonstrated here, is reduce the amount of electrical consumption by 21% per square foot since 2008. I mean, that's a tremendous reduction. Overall, the university's been able to reduce this electrical consumption just in all categories, I mean, in not just per square foot, but just overall by 16%. Now, let me put that into some context. According to a 2012 EPA report, the average office space, according to EPA, consumes right at 17 kilowatts per square foot. In LEED buildings are the green buildings, leadership by environmental and energy design, the buildings that we all aspire to build to be as green as possible. Average LEED green building will consume 13 kilowatts per square foot. Our main campus is now, as a result of everything we've done, has come down to an average of 11.22 per square foot. That's below LEED buildings, and that's below the EPA average. I mean, we have really had some success in that regard. This chart shows how the cost is across the top, and then the bars, of course, are the consumption. Now, one of the first things we had to do in order to do that was we had to make it a priority of the university. So it's been energy management is within the university's strategic plan. In other words, it is a stated goal that we're going to work at reducing our kilowatt per square foot every year by 2%, and it's part of our strategic plan. Now, what this next chart shows is the consumption of electrical versus expenditures. And the part here I wanted you to realize was we have been able to keep the cost pretty flat, even though we've been bringing down total consumption. What I wanted to illustrate here is, can you imagine if we had not been successful in the last few years of controlling our consumption and by conservation and efficiency, this would have had to have gone this way. So let me tell that story. In the last 5 years, only one time has the university added money in its fixed operating costs for utilities. Only one time in 5 years. And it was for when we added Gary Ransdell Hall in the music building. Otherwise, we've been covering it through efficiency and conservation.
That's big.
One of the, you know, so what are the variables that helped us get to these, this impressive conclusion? We started in 2009 with a campus-wide energy policy that was adopted by the university and widely spread, put on the university's website. Everyone's heard about and aware of the components of that. It was a collaborative effort with students, faculty, staff involved in it really guides a lot of our decision making, and it is an institutional instrument for making decisions. All right, you've heard about conservation vacation. Conservation vacation is only one of several things I'm going to share with you that we do that saves money. Let me share with you, though, what happened in 2012. What happened in 2012, this is finals week. Note several things here. Notice how we are setting back buildings and reducing energy on a day-to-day basis, that we purposely use setbacks. We purposely bring the campus down to the lowest level, even at nights. Nights and weekends are your opportunity for energy savings. So we bring the consumption of electricity down to where it does that. Those are the days before finals week last December. This is the holiday break. And the few spikes you see in it are from basketball games. In other words, the only thing that caused it to jump was ball games. So in other words, we kept it down during the break except for ball games. Here are the 3 days we had when we came back. That's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, back to the weekend. So this is a very telling chart about how you can save money during that period. Let me get to my numbers here. Well, in the first year we did this, we saved...
You don't use that much energy for a football game. I don't know why you would for a basketball game.
Listen, when we turn on the lights for football, it's a whole lot more. It's a whole lot more. Mr. Dyer here can tell you that when we turn those on, you know, the meter starts spinning. So what this is just one of many activities that you use to try to manage your resource. I mean, when we go away, all of us for vacation in our home, we should do these common things that happen during this time. What do we do during the time? Unnecessary lighting, computers. We ask everybody on campus why to participate. That's the good news, is that we ask everybody to participate. Unnecessary or unessential lighting is suspended. Even parking lots are closed and barriers are put up. Why have parking lots on when we're not here, etc.? So we will suspend interior, exterior lighting. People will unplug and undo everything they can before they leave because they are on board with this. Our staff and facilities will come in behind them and make sure things like that they can only be done at breakers will turn off water coolers and vending machines and things of that nature that just simply are not necessary during the break period. All right, another important thing that's happened in the last few years is that we have conducted an Energy Savings Performance Contract, an ESPC. Many of you probably heard about what they are. It's a case where you can invest money from an external source, off-balance sheet financing, to make improvements that are paid for through direct energy savings. In 2009, we started the process. We completed in 2012. There was $9.6 million invested in efficiency construction that saves us $1 million a year out of the budget. And we're using that $1 million to pay back the cost of what it took to do it. That work consisted of lighting retrofits in 38 buildings, 21 buildings that had HVAC controls, water conservation in 27 buildings, solar panels for the heating at the pool, even rainwater harvesting, as well as the point I want to make most is the first year we were on this, we have what's known as a measurement and verification process. You can't do this unless you have a very good M&V. And what we have found is in year one, we saved $1.3 million, which was a 30% improvement over what was even guaranteed. That difference allows us to have money for reinvestment. In other words, the key to our success is making wise investments, using your savings to create energy savings, and then reinvesting those dollars back into the system, which is what Ann has been allowing us to do. The other thing that happens is during summer months, we have what we call smart scheduling. academic affairs and provost. No one has agreed to some rescheduling that allow us to use our most efficient buildings in a consolidated fashion, and we have adjusted our operating hours to where in summer months, particularly in summer months, what is the highest cost of our utilities? It's electricity. When is the rates the highest, and when do we have the most consumption of electricity? It's summer, and we happen to have one of our lower levels of activity. So we have got to be efficient during that period to avoid what could be a very expensive utility bill for just summer operations. So what we do is through cooperation in academic affairs, we schedule buildings in a way that saves energy, as well as we have adjusted even our operating hours to where we come in earlier and we leave at 4 o'clock. And on Fridays, because of the extended hours, Monday through Thursday, we close most parts of the campus at 12:30 on Fridays through the summer peak demand. This is during summer school, not fall, not when we come back, but summer school. Results have been beneficial. Of course, we reduced energy use by 8% and cost by 6%. If I ever said you can't manage what you can't measure, we have bought a system as a result of investment with our our savings. A Panoptics is the name of it. It's a brand name. I'm using the term Panoptics is a brand name of a Johnson Controls energy management system. It is the absolute state-of-the-art system that allows you to engage a system that evaluates, monitors, and reports to you on a regular basis how your buildings are performing. Just because they built to certain standards don't mean they stay that way. If something gets out of kilter and it's not performing the way it was designed, this system monitors everything and tells you of the things that are going wrong. And of those things that are going wrong, it ranks them as, this is your priority. And we get that information on a regular daily basis. This is a 24-hour day, 7-day a week analyzing energy management system that helps facilities management be very proactive with immediate data to respond to needs on the campus. System also has energy management system has a dashboard which allows us to have real-time energy use from 22 buildings and 16 residence halls graphically displayed on the websites. So our faculty, staff, students at any time can access, and we use this data to demonstrate to people how they're performing in terms of their buildings. And that leads right next to the next part. We have a student engagement program whereby students compete. We had a competition. WKU participated in a energy conservation nationals, and students were measured as to how well they did and selected buildings that were put into the system. We competed regionally against, coincidentally, UK, U of L, and Brea, and they were the only three in the state that responded to want to participate, and of the group, we won the competition, and our students won the competition as a result of their buy-in to all of this. So we have student involvement, student engagement in this concept. You've already probably heard about how one of the ways we're saving money is to switch. We have totally switched as of the winter of 2012 was a total switchover as a result of several years of investment in our steam plant from coal to natural gas. Obviously, that is a significant savings in our cost of heating, as well as it's much more efficient. I mean, gas is more efficient from the difference is between 65 and 85% combustion efficiency difference just all along automatically. Not to mention the cost of natural gas is at present time less than coal. And when EPA gets through with doing what they're doing, the cost for coal is just going to continue to skyrocket. So we have made the conversion. The heating plant at our campus was coal in 1927, and from 1927 until 2012, the primary source for heat on this campus was coal. We are now 100% natural gas. The coal blowers are now antique, sitting in there on display. They're going to make us disconnect them, but we're going to leave them. Maybe they'll be a museum piece someday. They were put in the 50s and 60s as replacements. Additional efficiencies that's been done as on our own with energy savings from the energy and utility budget. We went over to Glasgow and replaced all their light fixtures, interior or and lamps, fixtures, etc., for an immediate return of investment of only 1.7 years as a result of that lighting upgrade at Glasgow. We did the same thing at the clinical education building, did the same thing across campus with occupancy sensors. Everywhere you go on this campus, we're still adding more and more and more automated occupancy sensors. In a perfect world, when we shut down this campus at night, if a professor wants to come in at 10 p.m. at night, when they walk through the door, the lights in the corridor for that section come on automatically. The lights come on when they go in the office, and when they go out, nobody has to turn on a switch. It all comes on. It all goes back off. In other words, it's set up that way for many buildings right now as a result. Our facilities management team has gone out and performed a great deal since 2010 of what could be called just simply weatherization of buildings. They have blown in insulation. They have put 1,043 door sweeps on. They have put down 17,000 linear feet of door weather stripping. And here's a humdinger. They have put down 78,890 linear feet of caulking. We've been doing an enormous amount of windows and door caulking. All those kind of things we think about in our home, we've been doing here as well. And as well as additional sealant. I mean, there's no way to do it all, but we have our zone technicians in our buildings have been doing that. Right now, today, this winter break, we are engaged in a really good project I wanted to mention last, and that is that on the main campus, there's going to be a lighting project. We're going to be switching our exterior parking lots to LED fixtures. That's going to reduce the fixtures significantly. It will reduce the consumption. It will increase the lumens of brilliance and save money and pay for itself in 6 years. I mean, this is a tremendous project. Oh, the lights are going to be guaranteed for 20 years. Meaning they don't burn out, you don't have to replace them, and they're going to be tied into the campus website, Wi-Fi system that's going to be able to tell the facilities that you've got lights out at this location. So, I mean, a tremendous project, again, all funded from our energy savings.
Johnson Controls again?
No, that's just an in-house project done here by Dale, who's...
Ben and I put this together.
In-house.
We're using Coupa Lighting and the Bluegrass Electrical, which is a local contract.
Let me introduce Dale Dyer, who's our energy management manager in our facilities department, and our new director of facilities management, by the way, who just started in the last few weeks, Trenton Blair, and who just joins us, who we're really thrilled to have here. So there's a face and a name. We had a vacancy that we filled with Trenton. And you've met Christian Ryan Downey, who is our coordinator of campus sustainability. When I get people together to plan these things, these are the people I go to who help us implement as well as communicate and coordinate out on campus. None of this can happen without everybody helping. These are the folks that help make it happen.
Let me add one thought that we do this for two reasons. First of all, the conservation, the savings, the financial impact, the financial value of good conservation habits. But the second reason we do it is because we are a university, and we want what we do to be part of the learning process. Not everything a student learns comes from the classroom. An awful lot of it is learned by what those students observe, do, engage in, participate in, study during their life here for 4 or 5 or whatever number of years they're with us. And we want this to be an important part of the higher education experience that our students get here, because these habits, if they observe and learn these habits here, they're probably going to carry them on in their future lives, in their future communities, in their future homes. And that's, am I doing a good job of describing what sustainability is all about, Christian?
Really good job.
Well, and on top of that, I would say, how can you convince people the importance of and the role of sustainability if you're not walking the walk?
Yeah.
you know, if you're just talking it, then what good is it? So, as I've told her, we got to walk the walk. We can't just talk it. So, we try to show through example or demonstrate through example.
But in a time when our budgets are being cut, as they have been since 2008, hopefully we'll avoid that in the years going forward. But the last several years, this project has been part of our budget cutting strategy, and these guys have really responded.
And we very much appreciate you working with faculty to keep everything that going in the academic building so we can finish up our semester by the end.
These upgrades give us more ability to control those areas and
right.
so forth, so it's not a problem, and we understand.
Right.
John, this past year we've not been feeding utility energy into the Downing Student Union. It's been under construction, so there have been some utility usage,
but
not nearly what it will be when that building opens. So what degree will that building coming back online this summer affect our numbers?
It'll likely have an impact. It really wasn't a total wipeout because we're supporting the needs of the Topic Cafe, which by design wasn't the most efficient building you could build.
Low
budget.
We've kept half the building open, so to speak, during the renovation.
And between the contractor's needs, the part that's been left open, the usage here was fairly substantial, though diminished.
We're going to have a conversation real soon about what can we do for next year in terms of the keeping our costs down for fixed operating costs. We're going to see if we can't keep Downing University Center operational as needed within the existing budget, or less if possible, but within budget. We think it can be built into the operation.
Right.
So thank you.
John, I have a question on that Johnson Control. So they inject the capital, we receive the savings, we pay it back. Then there's got to be a point that savings then drives back to your budget either to, again, reinvest in more energy saving, so we're using our own capital at that time.
That's correct. Now, let me tell you the good news about that. When we put this thing together initially, it was a 15-year amortization, which meant
that
in the 15 years, the debt was paid off and you got all the savings.
Mm-hmm.
We were able to refinance this project because of one time it was first originally created, it was financed at a rate that was higher than what the rates changed, and we refinanced it, and instead of taking the cash out of it, we decided to shorten the years because we knew that would be the better gain.
Right.
We went, Brad?
$2.8 million savings.
And we saved how many years?
I don't remember the years.
I think we went from 15 to 12.
About 12 years, 12 point something.
So we went from 15 to 12 years. So 12 years on top of 2009 means we'll start getting that ourselves. So that's how those investments eventually pay off.
We bumped the savings on the end. John wanted to bump the savings on the end so that we paid that off earlier so we can reinvest that quicker.
Is there a guarantee associated with that?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's got a very clear, if they don't meet the minimum guarantee, they pay us. So there's a very concise, some of these companies want to do it to where they want to throw things in there like operational savings. It's not direct energy savings, and we wouldn't allow that. Unless it was a verifiable, measurable energy savings as a result of what they've done, we don't put it on the...
What happens to the 30%? In your example.
The 30% rolls back in. That's your savings that's in your budget that we invested ourselves.
Okay.
We did all those, some of these projects. That's where we get
our
money.
There's not a share there.
No. That's ours. That's all ours. So they got us meet the minimum.
Right.
And there's no sharing above that. So it was a very nice model if you can make it work. Off-balance sheet financing, $9.6 million of improvements.
John, thank you very much. That's better than a video.
Thank you.
Mr. President, I just want to go on record. I trumped Dr. Braille on, he had a video, and in his committee meeting, I got to save a bunch of money. So
I'm bringing a pony next time.
Are you? Well, I had to do something to stand up. We had a dog the last time.
I know.
That's right.
Mr. Chairman, that ends the Finance and Budget Committee reports.
In case you're wondering what these little numbers are, I think these are courtesy of Richard Miller.
how many times have you seen your bags come off the conveyor at an airport and wonder, they all look alike? Well, wrap that around your handle on your bag or your briefcase or your suitcase or whatever, and you can identify it immediately.
Well, I know you won't have a handle on things. Oh, yo.
You waited all day for that, didn't you?
Yeah.
I think it's time to adjourn after that one.